You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
We, as a European-wide regulator, can influence the environment in which our business sector is operating. So that's why the EU's role and the Commission's role is so crucial. As you may know, we proposed the circular economy package just before end of last year. And it's full of stuff which I'm not going to go through, or I'm going to present all the single details, but there are two parts in this proposal. The first one is revised waste legislation, and another one is action plan, which is sometimes even more important than those legislative proposals we did. So, first thing what we decided in the Commission is that we have to understand the concept of circular economy right in order to create incentives and restrictions and create better, more competitive regulatory environment. We have to use our regulatory power so that we indicate very, very clearly where profits is coming from. We must enable business to make profit when they enter the circular economy. Otherwise, we don't have economy, and we will not achieve our environmental goals. So market economy is the best friend of circular economy, more sustainable economy, and that's why we have to take this into account. So if looking at the waste proposal, we proposed that by 2030, recycling must improve or increase to 65%, at least to 65% of all municipality waste. And this is legally binding target, legally binding to all 28 member states. Also, when looking at or when talking about packaging materials, there's a legally binding target to raise recycling to 75% by 2030. And also, the third legally binding target is to reduce landfilling, the waste going to landfill, to maximum 10% by 2030. So those three legal binding regulations will create a new regulatory environment which creates incentives to invest in more circular economy. As we all know, we have well-functioning internal market in when talking about virgin raw materials. You can buy and sell raw materials just like this across border. But if you try to sell or buy secondary raw material, used raw material, then we don't really have a single market at the moment. There are lots of national restrictions, lots of national legislations on this field, and it makes circular economy business models almost impossible. So if we wanted to use more used plastic, for instance, or other stuff, we need to regulate European-wide. So that's why one of our core interest is to harmonize regulation on secondary raw material in order to create a well-functioning single market, as well-functioning single market as we have in virgin materials. Also, the consumer's role is very important. As always in market economy, consumer is the king. So that's why we have to take into account how we could empower customers who want to choose more sustainable products, who make deliberate choices between the products, refrigerators, who are consuming a lot of energy, and those who are using consuming less electricity, for instance. This is we understand this example because everybody who's bought refrigerators or things like that, we have seen the labeling, and you can see that whether it's 1A or AAA machine. Now we want to widen the scope from energy consumption to other areas of circular economy. For instance, there should be a labeling how resource efficient product this is, or if there are how much recycled raw materials there are being used for producing this particular product. So in order to give consumers better opportunity to do their choices. Some may say that our energy labeling is just a little minor thing. And as we all have heard, little sometimes ridiculous example of eco-design, how the eco-design directive has been used or interpreted, like banning shower caps or stuff. Our assessment is that by the end of 2020, eco-design directive will save energy equal to amount of Italy's annual electricity consumption. We are in encouraging path in this this development. So if you count together all those little things what the Commission has done in previous years, it will create a huge positive impact to energy saving. So that's why I'm a great fan of eco-design directive, and we should use it more efficient way than we have done, and expand the scope from energy labeling to other issues. So, as I said, the consumer is a king also in this issue. So, my final point before going to Q&A session is that how to finance this development. The United Nations has estimated that there's a need for trillions of new investments on this, and nobody knows how much it will cost. But anyway, as long as you can make it clear where profit is coming from and you make it possible to make profit, then the financing is not the primary concern. Because if linear model is less beneficial or less good way to do your business than circular model, if you regulate the thing, things like this, then you can get profit from different sources than in linear model. And that's why it's profitable for the private sector to do investments. But also there's a need for public investments. We have already dedicated, in the European level, we have already dedicated 650 million euros for next 2 years under Horizon 2020 program to circular economy investments and innovations. Addition to this, in our structure funds, we have 5 billion euros for next 5 years for improving, for instance, waste recycling and waste treatment. Now the question is how to use those structural funds in the countries which are benefiting from structural funds to most innovative and efficient ways. So to be a little bit too simplistic, if a problem is that in some countries there are lots of illegal landfills, the major problem, the major progress is not to establish public legal landfills. It's better than nothing. But how about if those illegal landfills were replaced by modern technology which enables a frog leap to another stage of circulating raw materials, collecting waste better than before, and using it for profit making. And finally, one thing is which is very close to what I'm doing every day is to use of EFSI, the European Fund for Strategic Investment, which aims to crowd in private resources to new innovative investment. FC is already up and running. In 6 months' time, it has managed to finance 42 projects, both industrial but also infrastructure projects. And this will trigger around 25 billion investments to real economy. 75% of the money is coming from private sector. Addition to this, it has done agreements with intermediary banks on SME financing. There are 82 banks already now who have signed an agreement with FC. And this again will trigger around 25 billion investments done by small and medium-sized enterprises. So in 6 months' time, we have managed to mobilize around 50 billion. And as I said, it's around 75% of this money comes from private sector. So this facility could be used for new innovations on circular economy area and investments in this field. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very curious to listen to you and get feedback from you. And also, I'm curious to know what is your main concern, and I'm ready to get good examples and good advices what we could do more. Our package, Commission Circular Economy package, will not complete everything. And it's a good start. And now we just have to understand that it's a moving process. It's a living process. World around us is changing all the time, and we have to calibrate our regulations and incentives every single year in order to create better environment for those who want to leave linear model and enter to more productive, more profitable circular economy model. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Katainen, you've described for us some of the key highlights in your package, and I'm just going to give the room a moment to think about questions that they'd like to pose, and maybe I'll just abuse my role here and ask you a question. You talked about how the eco-label is going to be more than energy efficiency, and you talked about the resources that included. When I read the Commission's information package, I noticed a word that really struck home for me as someone whose home, probably like yours, is a junkyard of obsolete, unrepairable technology. You mentioned that the eco-label will also include the extent to which a product is repairable, which I think is interesting. Can I just ask you, we're talking about this big paradigm shift. We've got to move from the linear to the circular economy. How will we know when we've got a circular economy? What would it look like? What would it feel like? How would lives be different as well as businesses?
If looking from business point of view, in circular model, more and more resources are coming from secondary raw materials, and the profit is coming slightly from different sources than it is coming at the moment. So if you sell some product, or actually if you lease some of your products to someone, you want to get it back once it's used, because you either want to repair it, or then you want to sell the material in your product to another producer. And part of your profit comes from this transaction. So it's not just like I buy raw material, I produce a product, and I sell, and I don't care. So this is the way how, or one example how things will change. From consumer point of view, I just came back from Davos, and I had a chance to participate to circular economy discussion in Davos. And there were one company who is building up washing machine business, which is based on leasing. So they were asking what kind of kicks you will get just to be an owner of washing machine. Are you happy owner of washing machine, or is your main concern how to get your clothes washed? And I must confess that the latter one is exactly what interests me more than to be an owner of the washing machine. And they say that their business model is based on more or to better washing machines, which lasts longer, because they want to lease the same machine as long as possible. And they also have service if something gets wrong with the machine, somebody comes to fix it. And once the life cycle of the machine expires, they want to get it back because they will sell the things, the used materials to the others. Also, one company said that, are you happy when you own this pulp? Or is your main concern lightening? And of course, lightening is the main concern. And they have a business, everybody knows the company, it's Philips. So basically, they are selling lightening services, which means that they want to produce more sustainable pulps because they also pay the energy bill. And they have a maintenance service. So basically, the customers is paying only a monthly pay on lightening, not to owning of the pulps. So this is the way how things may change. And also, if you have a mobile phone which get programmed, it should be able to repair it. My wife just dropped her iPhone on the floor, and the glass went broken. It was almost impossible to replace it. Finally, we found a company, little company from Finland, in middle of nowhere, who was able to do it, and it costs 160 euros to replace the glass. Can you imagine? 160 euros, only one glass. So it tells that the market is not well developed. That's it. So just a few examples how things could look different if we manage to read a circular economy.
Okay. Thank you for that. Let me open up the floor. You've had a chance. I can see some hands up already. I hope we'll be able to get to you all. I'll start at the back and I'll move forward. If you'd just like to keep your questions short and introduce yourself and your organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Katainen. I'm Christophe Ivoteau. I represent the United Nations Industrial Development Organization. And we are the UN specialized agency that promotes circular economy around the world through resource efficiency, cleaner production, etc. I would like to congratulate you and the Commission for this circular economy package. Now my question is more on the external dimension. Europe is doing well. We hope it will do even better. But you know that we predict that 80% of growth will take place outside Europe in the next 20 years. And you know already in some countries the damages of the industrial development on the environment. And how to now use all the capital that Europe has, the technology, the knowledge, to make sure that all parts of the world also join this circular economy. And this is exactly on this external dimension that I would like to see your reaction. Thank you.
Excellent. That's a very interesting question. Europe and the world, as he's explained, you know, we're currently just about still the largest economy in the world. Other parts will surpass us quickly. How are we relating to that?
There are similar type of challenges as there are when we talk about, for instance, using digital infrastructure for education in developing countries. Everything is basically possible, but then the question is whether there is enough political will to adopt new technologies. The circular economy, because it's a wide concept, it should itself create incentives to look at the new ways to regulate the market. And there, the regulatory power comes to the picture. So that's why United Nations and member states in the bilateral relationship with developing markets could work together. For instance, if we manage to create better regulatory environment in Europe, we could give advices or at least give some ideas how to regulate the market so that it could immediately change or start process changing from moving from linear model to circular model. So regulatory environment is very, very important because technology is also already there and it's developing all the time. The question is, again, as I said before, we have to signal very clearly where profit is coming from for private sector. And of course, then the public investments can also play a role there.
Excellent, thank you. Let me see who else. Yes, this lady here.
My name is Elsa Huseman. I'm working for a new initiative of the European Climate Foundation on industry and innovation. I was very interested in what you said about what I guess is called the servitization of the economy. And I'm also much more interested in being able to wash my clothes than owning a washing machine. What's the scope in this circular economy package you've presented to reinforce this? Because you mentioned labeling that is much more than energy, but it's still about using products, better products, but using products. So what's the scope for encouraging this servitization? That's my question.
Thank you.
Eco-design directive is a very powerful tool, and we could use it more than we use it at the moment to change the scope from energy efficiency to another areas. Also, we are planning to regulate the life expectancy of the product. So how long your devices should last, and if that is not the case, it should be possible to repair them. So repairability is one area to which we will concentrate on more. So it's not easy to regulate things like that, but we believe that it is possible. So it will create a new market, new ways of create service and to create longer lasting products at the same time. So more generally speaking, the policymakers who get interested in something, in this case in circular economy, we usually want to do as much as possible. Because we are very enthusiastic. We want to change the world immediately, and there's always a risk that we use our regulatory power wrong way and too actively. I'm relatively newcomer in this theme, but I have got this has become one of my obsessions. I'm very firm believer of circular economy business models and circular economy as a whole, and I have to hold myself not to interfere everywhere, because I can destroy a lot if I regulate wrong things. So we have to be very careful what to regulate, what are the things which should not be regulated, and what kind of regulations, the quality of regulation, of course, is very important.
And I'm wondering, picking up on that interesting point you made about the shift from products to services, in Europe for some time we've been concerned that we're losing jobs, that manufacturing has disappeared. And I'm wondering if, with this new emphasis on services, this is perhaps where you're seeing all of the potential growth in new jobs coming from, because if we'd lost the battle on manufacturing, could we re-win it by creating servicing for products?
Yeah, it's possible, because services are usually very labor intensive. In current linear model, labor costs can be really a burdensome in global competition. But if the business models are changing, that you get part of the product profits from selling the used materials to the others, or then you get part of the profit from the services side, the overall price doesn't necessarily get higher to consumers, but the business model and logic is slightly different, and in that sense it's socially and environmentally more sustainable.
Okay, thank you. Yes, there's a lady here, and then I'll be coming to this side of the room. Yes.
Thank you, and thank you for a very interesting presentation. Dorte Nyberg from the Confederation of Danish Industry. Just to pick on the shift you mentioned from products to services, a very important lever could be the public sector as well. And thinking about the current public procurement directives, we see certain challenges as to what you refer to as the shift from lampposts to lightning. So we both see the public procurement directives and the current legislation, but also a mental, we need to see some kind of mental shift within the public sector for them to be able to shift to the services. So I'd like to hear your reaction to this and where you see the main challenge. Thank you.
Green public procurement is one part of our proposal. We already have a regulation on this, but it's not, unfortunately, it's not that much used. We want to look at the public procurement regulation and consider what should be done in order to make it more attractive. Somebody is proposing that it should be legally binding, but before entering this far, we have to make sure that our concept is really working. We are considering to widen the scope to repairability, for instance, of the products and durability of the products. So this is an excellent tool, again, which can be used by public sector to promote new business models, because public procurement in Europe plays a big role in our economy. So that's why the volumes would be very significant if we manage to use it much more. So one of the messages is that if there are people in this room or elsewhere who want to influence to our work on this field, just let us know, because we want to collect information from outside in order to shift the public procurement procedure so that it would become even more attractive than it is at the moment.
Excellent, thank you. And then I'll come to the front row. Yes, this gentleman, no, second row. And then I'll come to you. And
then thank you. Sergio Napolitano from the European Generic Medicines Association. My question is related to the concept of sustainability that you raised, resource efficiency, and also to the mention you made on the battle that we are losing on manufacturing. This is actually true. This is partially true when it comes to the pharmaceutical sector. The regulatory environment today forces pharmaceutical production outside of Europe. But the Commission has understood this very well, and they have included in the strategy for internal market the proposal for increasing manufacturing on pharmaceuticals in Europe. What I wanted to ask you is how long will the implementation of this proposal take? Because there are today, now as we are speaking, pharmaceutical companies have the intention to invest in new manufacturing. They have to decide whether to invest in Europe or outside of Europe. And we can create jobs, we can create growth in Europe thanks to this proposal. So I wanted to know what you think about this. Thank you.
Europe must be competitive for pharmaceutical production because we are educating, for many reasons, but one of the reasons is that we are educating a huge amount of people in this sector. We are also using lots of public resources for research and development of pharmaceuticals. So the manufacturing also should be possible. It doesn't make any sense to create a good infrastructure, to create new products, but production itself wouldn't be competitive in Europe. It's very right, as you said, that the regulatory environment is the biggest issue. My colleague, Vytenis Andriukaitis, is in responsible of this regulation, and we just had a project team meeting which gathers together a number of commissioners on investment plan. He was telling about the future proposals. I am not that familiar with all the details what he's going to propose, but it's absolutely one of our priorities. We have to look how the business environment and world economy has structured change, and what is our response to this. It's clear that we cannot compete with the lowest possible wages or taxes against those who are in different positions than we are, but the regulatory environment should be competitive and level to those who are challenging our industry.
Thank you. I have here in the front row, and then I'm coming, there's a lady here.
Good morning, Commissioner. Tom Parker, Managing Partner of Calm Associates.
Hold it closer, yeah.
I have a question with regard to the European Parliament's resolution on the implementing decision on DEHP. And it relates to the point of secondary raw materials and legacy chemicals. I'd like to know what the Commission's policy is further to the resolution that was adopted by the Parliament at the end of last November, which effectively means that the availability of secondary raw materials is in question. Thank you.
I must say that I don't know this particular issue that well. It's better not to comment on, because otherwise I would say something wrong. So I'm very sorry. I cannot answer to your question.
This lady here in the front row.
Yes, good morning, Vice President Katainen. My name is Juliette Jacques, and I work for Starch Europe. Starch Europe also is a member of the European Bioeconomy Alliance. And my question is about the synergies between the bioeconomy and the circular economy. And as you know, our companies produce from renewable raw materials in integrated biorefineries for all the outlets of the bioeconomy. And we'd like to know, actually, how the ongoing activities of the bioeconomy strategy could be integrated into the wider circular economy. Thank you. We're also thinking of public procurement, of course.
Yeah, thank you very much. One example of this integration of bioeconomy to circular, the wider circular economy concept, is to harmonize fertilizer regulation in order to allow to use fertilizers which are used of waste or from used materials, and also to accept biofertilizers across Europe, because at the moment this field or this sector is very national, and that's why it's only a matter of creating single market, meaning that we have to harmonize the regulation. And of course, green public procurement issue could help to use more sustainable products made of natural resources, I mean bioresources and also recycled resources. But this fertilizer directive is on our table, and I guess we can finalize the proposal in a couple of months' time.
Thank you.
My name is Bertel Hering, the European Beverage Carton Industry. I basically would like to ask the same question as the previous speaker about the importance of the bioeconomy into the circular economy policy making, because it's such an important part and it seems to be a little bit ignored or underestimated. You, from the Finnish background, know how important bioeconomy can be. So I would like to support in general, not specific on fertilizer, but in general, the importance. However, it allows me to ask another question, and that is on the landfill policy. Your colleague, Commissioner Vella, said the best way to recycle and to improve recycling is to establish landfill frameworks for this. We tend to agree fully with this. We think we could even go further and say not only a 75% packaging recycling target, but to ensure that you recycle and you will recycle what can be recycled, also to go a little bit further and do go into the direction of a landfill ban for packaging by 2030. This is a view which is shared by many packaging industries, and we would like to hear your views about doing a little bit more ambition in that sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow, strong message from industry. Be more ambitious. Go further.
Yeah, it's a good news. Actually, there are big differences between the member states. But also one thing which belongs to our package is to look at the future, to ban landfilling waste which has been collected separately. And this is the case with packaging material in most of the cases. And actually, the biggest challenge in some particles is to how to organize the separate collection. So that's why we will have a special proposals on some particular waste particles, like plastic demolition materials and packaging material, just to mention a few. So the most obvious ones, which you can very clearly say that, okay, this is the one what is in our target, and it can be collected like this, and what to do afterwards. So packaging sector is probably an issue where we can go further the fastest, and there again the best practices should be shared by all the member states. This is exactly what I meant when I said that in those countries who are enjoying structural funds, they could copy the best model. For instance, in some member states, the glass recycling is almost 100%. Why to put any glass on landfill if it's possible to collect? So to use funds for making frog leap to best practice should be possible.
Excellent. Thank you. We have a question here, and then we have one more question there at the back. Thank you.
Yes, Didier Bourguignon, European Parliament Research Service. You highlighted measures such as extending the scope of green public procurement or extending the scope of the Eco-Design Directive, which were already mentioned in the 2011 Resource Efficient Europe Strategy. And these measures exactly in the same way as they are outlined in the action plan. And I was wondering, how is this different now since, well, no action has been taken from 2011 until now? How is this going to change in the future? Thank you.
Commissioner, can I just take that last question, because we've got 2 minutes left and you can respond to both of them.
Thank you very much. I'm Judith Varga from the European Parliament. I'm working in the Environment Committee. And my question would concern a very specific part of the waste stream, but which is very dominant, the extractive industrial waste, which is the mining waste, let's say. And I saw in the action plan that the Commission is rather focusing on the consumer part and the household waste and other waste streams and product design. But we all know that even under the circular economy, we still will need a lot of primary resource extraction, unfortunately. And whether the Commission has any plans to modernize this sector, because under the Mining Waste Directive, which was in 2006 adopted, we all know that there is a first principle to prevent the extractive waste. Although, like just one example, the bauxite, the aluminium production still has big industrial waste streams and leaving big tailing ponds across Europe. So whether the Commission has any plans to prevent these wastes.
So final few questions from your institutional colleagues in the Parliament.
Yeah, thank you very much. I would say that the main difference is implementation. Because as you said, many of those ideas which are related to Eco-Design Directive has been raised by somebody earlier, but unfortunately they have not been implemented yet for some reason. I don't know why. But I believe that there is a bigger awareness of opportunities and willingness to implement things which could really contribute to this aim to move from linear to circular. So this is the only honest explanation I can give you to you. On industrial waste, one of the most promising issue is to look at the industrial symbiosis. So there are lots of very good bad examples that some factories producing something and as a side product there are lots of waste coming out, but because it's treated as a waste, it's very difficult to use as a raw material for the other industry. And the most fascinating models I have seen in industry is to kind of it's because the national regulator has not claimed some particle as a waste, but it's seen as a primary raw material to another industry. So there are seamless flows of virgin material coming to the pipeline, and there is some primary product of this particular company being produced, and those particles which are not used by this particular factory are the primary sources for the others. So this industrial symbiosis in this field, we can achieve a lot. Of course, there may be some need for additional regulation in some areas, but if we concentrate it to this issue first, we could save lots of resources. And this is, for instance, in steel industry, in bio industry especially, and also in mining. This may enable to create more sustainable models.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to draw this conversation to a close. I think you would perhaps all agree that you've been very frank and honest with us, and your passion and your energy and your commitment to the idea of the circular economy is clear. As we said at the beginning, it's still a relatively new phenomenon and concept. People are still thinking, what is this all about? And that last message about industrial symbiosis, perhaps in a few years this will fall off our tongues as easily as circular economy and linear economy. Anyway, thank you for coming to meet us. I'm sure everyone in the audience will look forward to hearing more about it and assessing the implementation, because if we get this right in Europe, as you say, we could be leading the world in it. So thank you for your time. Thank you for the audience. Feel free to stay and network a little bit longer. But thank you again, Commissioner, for your time.
Thank you very much. And I would like to wish you, or I want to encourage you to be vocal and loud on this matter, because we need more voices from different angles. Because as you said, circular economy as a concept is relatively new and people don't understand it. So we should show good examples. And that's why we need more public debate on the issue. Thank you.